he makes the point of the mass exodus. Why a mass exodus? Because this got like Friedman's kind of like, no, it wasn't a mass exodus. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
He's very much against this mass exodus. And he makes an interesting point. He says,
welcome to the Pondercast, where we think deeply about the Bible and theology. Let's get pondering.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Pondercast. I feel like we should add an applause right there because it's been so long since we've been here. In case you guys have forgotten, my name is Drew, and I'm along with my co-host, Perry Siddons. And it has been a long while since we've done an episode, and that is because life has caught up with us. We had a lot of time at the beginning of this, and now, you know, one of us is getting his master, one of us getting a master's thesis, and one of us has
master's degree.
Whatever. And one of us had two kids in the span of 6 months. So we're we'll figure out that logic.
Yeah.
Anyways, not twins. So we've kind of been on a little bit of a hiatus trying to catch up with life, but we are excited to be back bringing you forth the Pondercast season three. Are we on season three?
Yes, we are. Jeez.
Season three started to a rocky start, but hopefully we can come through in the middle and really finish off strong. How are we doing, Perry?
Oh, very good. Was losing hope there for Perry's ponderings in the Pondercast. Haven't been doing much, but we're back. Hopefully, I'm really hoping to do some more articles as well on Perry's Ponderings. I enjoy doing it, but man, like you said, trying to do a master's degree just takes up so much of my brain space. But it's exciting to be back. And yeah, the one thing that I'm hoping that I really would love to do with this season, I want to really get the courage to email scholars and get them on to talk about their books and whatnot, because there's been a lot of interesting things I've been listening to in the last little while where I'm like, man, they seem like fun people to talk to. So
like, let's get Richard Elliot Friedman on.
It's a good teaser. Good teaser for today's episode.
Yeah. Those of you who don't know, he's an author. I have a book called The Exodus. Anyways, he talks about the historical Exodus.
But I was...
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I was going to segue into the topic, but you go ahead. Oh, yeah. I feel like you had something good to say there.
I started reading before Christmas. It's a pretty academic book. It's called Paul and the Gift by John Barclay. So he talks about this conception of grace in Paul's time and in Second Temple Judaism thinking. And I never did. Like, it's just a huge book. Yeah. I have not yet got to the exegesis of Paul. But as I was reading it, I thought, I need to get the courage to email this guy and say, would you come on our podcast? Because he's a pretty big name in Pauline's in New Testament scholarship.
What's his name? Sorry, did I miss it?
John Barclay.
Oh, like the Barclay?
There's a few Barclays. Like, there's, I think, William Barclay writes.
That's the one I'm thinking of,
William. Popular commentaries. And this is... pretty high name. So I thought, you know, maybe it's time that people don't want to listen to us, even though they keep listening.
Never wanted to.
Because I thought, maybe we've done 2 years of podcasting. And I thought, for me anyways, I had all this information in my brain. And apparently it just was like good to go for 2 years. And then I felt like my well was dry and trying to figure out what we're going to do for this season. But I think we just got to think outside the box and like what we're doing with today's topic.
Got to think differently, as one
think deeply
has once said. Think deeply. Think deeply. Yes.
By thinking differently.
Yeah. So today... Can we get into it? Is that okay?
Yes.
Absolutely. All right. Today, we are going back all the way to the Exodus. Our topic for today. Not the book Exodus.
Oh.
But the event of the Exodus, which is located in the book Exodus. I digress on that. And that's why I brought that name up, Richard Elliot Friedman. He writes a book called The Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how it happens and why it matters. And I don't know how many of our listeners have heard different views on the Exodus.
Let me say why we're bringing up this topic is,
well, if I can mention one more thing.
Yep. Okay. Sorry.
We also, Perry and I, were looking at an article by Peter Enns.
Yep.
Yeah. And he's the Bible for Normal People podcast. That's his podcast, I believe.
And he's a Bible scholar. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has a really good podcast, and he's very outside the box thinker, which I appreciate. It's really interesting listening to him talk. But between his view and this book that I have, I don't know what sources you have, but it's very much thinking differently about the Sunday school story of the Exodus. It's very different thinking from what we were always taught. You know, all the nations of Israel exited Egypt after being a slave for 400 years in this mass exodus of 2 million people, and they escaped the armies of Pharaoh, right? That's what we're kind of told in Sunday school, which is all fine and dandy, but maybe there's a different spin on it. Anyways, before we get into that, what's your preliminary thoughts on this? What did you want to add to this intro?
Well, yeah, I came across this article from Pete Enns. Yeah. It was like ages ago, maybe a year ago now. I'm not sure. Called "Did the Exodus Story Really Happen?" And I thought that's a perfect Pondercast episode right there, because it's provocative. That question makes me uncomfortable when I read it. It is, and I'm a little frustrated. But it's a short article that he write, like it's a blog article, and I watched the video, like it's based on a video he did. So I watched the video, and he seems like actually a really nice guy.
Peter Enns.
Yeah, like he seems like a really easy guy to listen to. And I thought, oh man, he just seems angry. And like, you know, there's just this element or this idea in my mind that people who write this kind of thing are trying to, they're angry. They have an agenda. They're trying to, you know, be liberal. Like he's probably would consider himself a kind of a liberal evangelical. And we talked about a little bit about him a year ago with some of our Genesis episodes.
Right.
Because he wrote, I have his book on Adam and Evolution, and I still have not read it, but it's just like so provocative. Anyways.
Classic.
And it might be worth trying to cajole him on here, but it's an interesting idea. You know, he says, he begins saying, on the positive side, Exodus is Israel's national origin story. So, he doesn't discount the theological veracity of the event,
right?
But I have a hard time just saying this preliminarily, divorcing the historical veracity and the theological veracity, or coherency maybe, and I'll get to why. When we, you know, I'll reflect on that later. So I am coming into this recognizing I have a hard time with what he says, but I do find, like you brought up Richard Friedman, and I found this article on, this is an awesome website, reformjudaism.org. I think it's kind of like a liberal, more egalitarian Judaism, like trying to be a modern Judaism. And he's responding to something that they wrote, where they had some biblical scholars and rabbis saying that the biblical Exodus is fiction. And I thought, oh, it would be worth looking at a Jewish perspective of this, because they have skin in the game too, for a lot of Jews. It's not just Christians who this matters to. So,
There you have it. Was it a fictional thing or a non-fictional thing? And I think right there, that rubs a lot of people the wrong way to say the Bible is fiction, right? Even stories like Jonah, right? No, it can't be fiction. It's not allowed to be. Well, maybe it was. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that thing, that's one of the pinnacle books that scholars don't know if it's fictional or not. A lot of conservative evangelicals don't like that idea, right? Adam and Eve have to be real people. The Exodus has to be real. Exactly how the Bible said. Jonah has to be real. That snake had to have talked in the garden, right? Like, stuff like that, right? Like, it has to have, and maybe it does, but as you all know, our listeners, we tend to try to not go with the common conservative evangelical way of thinking and try to expand outside the box. So that's what we're going to do today. Just a preliminary note. I thought this was really, I'm going to read this from this book. So I thought it was really interesting. He makes the point of the mass exodus. Why a mass exodus? Because this got like Friedman's kind of like, no, it wasn't a mass exodus. That didn't happen. Yeah. He's very much against this mass exodus. And he makes an interesting point. He says, just think about it. If 2 million people, that's the conservative, you know, because it says 600 and whatever, 37,000 men plus women and children. That's what the Bible tells us. So presumably every man has a wife, a couple kids. That's how they kind of get the 2 million, right? That like it's a kind of a fudged number a bit, but they get it. And he says, let's presume there were 8 people across. And that's how they marched. 8 people across. He says, when the first ones got to Mount Sinai, half the people would have still been in Egypt. If you do the math and like correlate it. I thought that was a really interesting point. He's like, yeah, they crossed the desert and got to Mount Sinai. Half of the people still would have been. So if you think like 2 million people is a lot of people to walk that far while being chased by an army and all of them get away. That's basically his point, which I think is a really interesting point to bring up initially. What do you think on that front? Do you think, because in this article too, kind of touches on the amount of people, but not really, kind of talks about different aspects of it. Do you have any thoughts on that? That idea, like the amount of people that left, like, do you think it's like 2 million, like the, like what people say, or do you think it may be a small, like what
I should
like,
have looked your, up? Is there a number in the Bible? That's my error.
There's a number of 600, I think 635,000 men. It says 635,000 men left. I don't, maybe it's not 635, but I know there's a number. And then they presume the women and children among them. Like that's the presumption. And so it's kind of a, they say that's kind of a conservative number, 2 million people. That's the consensus of people who think that on people whose board is the Exodus is historical, 2 million people left is the idea. That's
right. And he, in this article where he touches on that, obviously this is a much more succinct and concise version of his book.
Yeah.
Which is called The Exodus.
Yeah. The Exodus. Yeah.
So I thought he made some interesting points, like saying that if there were that many people coming out of the Exodus, or coming out of Egypt. Ugh, it's frustrating that it's Egypt and Exodus. So I'm going to get that mixed up.
Yeah, too close.
Probably. That if there were 2 million people leaving Egypt, that there would be, and roaming the desert for 40 years, there would have been, like, there would be a lot more archaeological evidence. I think that's actually what his opponents are saying. And then he says, oh yeah, that's right. Because his opponents say that archaeologists have combed the area of Sinai, like where they would have the biblical evidence says that they roamed, and not found any evidence of the mass of millions of people who the Bible says were there for 40 years. That assertion is just not true. There have not been many major excavations in the Sinai, and we most certainly have not combed it. Moreover, uncovering objects buried 3,200 years ago, that's just mind-boggling, is a daunting endeavor. An Israeli colleague laughingly told me that a vehicle that had been lost in the 1973 Yom Kippur War was recently uncovered under 16 meters. That's 52 feet of sand, 52 feet in 40 years.
Yeah, that's an excerpt from that book.
Oh, okay.
But
it is interesting to make that assertion that the archaeological evidence is actually not as accessible, and there hasn't been a lot of searching the archaeological evidence in that area. And, yeah, it's just difficult. And it might be politically difficult as well, just where it is. Like in
And like people who think of the Exodus of not the mass Exodus, they'll say, well, there's no evidence for a mass Exodus. And the people on the other side will say, well, no evidence isn't lack of events. It's just no evidence, right? You can't say there's no evidence, therefore that guy must have murdered that person, right? It doesn't make any sense. You need evidence to say it happened. You can't just say evidence so it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It doesn't take away from the events.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So like with what Pete N says, he's going... He's looking at it saying that the Egyptians have no record of this in their historical records.
Yeah.
Therefore, it didn't happen. Or he doesn't say that. What he's arguing in his short article is that, yes, there's glimpses of Egypt, and this is a person that has distant memories, or it's been passed on a few generations, and they're kind of filling in the blanks a little bit based on the little information they have. So it's not totally false, but it's obviously pretty mythical, legendary.
You mean the author of Exodus? That's what you're talking about, like the person who's telling the story. Okay, yeah.
Right. And but it still has theological bearing for the nation of Israel. And he argues that they would have had like Egypt would have had record of this. They would have spun it in their favor. They would have said the gods were angry with us or whatever, something like that, which makes sense. And so, of course, the biblical evidence, for some reason, because it has this theological agenda, it can't be accurate. Well, at the same time, nobody was writing at the time with some kind of objective view of what was happening in the world, objective view of history. Even that assertion, he's saying that the Egyptians would have spun it in their favor. Well, then obviously I guess what he's pointing at is that even that is just like it would verify that there's a hint of historicity to the Exodus. But what I'm saying is that it frustrates me that because the Bible has this theological agenda or theological grounding, like, it's not actually objective history according to our 21st century way of looking at history, even though probably everybody up until the Enlightenment was writing from a spiritual viewpoint for the most part. Like everybody, most people in the ancient Near East had a conception of deity and why they were being judged or why they were being blessed by their deity. Right. So I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself because I just find this so frustrating. So
why do you find that frustrating? Because you think the Bible is a theological agenda and does not historical?
I'm saying just because there isn't... Okay, this is what I'm trying to say. Why can't the Bible just be taken as historical truth? I'm not saying that it's necessarily 21st century way, like objective truth. Not saying that. Because it's not objective. Like there's a certain way that historians write today.
Right. So you're saying why does it have to be theological but not historical?
Why is it like, there's a glimpse of history here, but because the Egyptians didn't write about it, then it can't be? Because people argue, he's arguing against the conclusion by some people that, the Egyptians wouldn't have written this because they didn't want to include this defeat. And I find that really compelling. If there's evidence that they would have written a defeat in their history and spun it, then that, you have to deal with that. but also it's just the fact that we have the book from how many, you know, this ancient book shows that there's glimpses of history found within it.
Right.
So why can't it be considered a historical work on its own? I guess because from a scholarly standpoint, it was edited later on in Israel's history. Therefore, right. Showing that
Terry, I feel like you're being a bit of a hypocrite here, because in our Genesis Exodus, I think you believe the opposite, talking about the narrative history of creation. Right? Well, you wouldn't necessarily take it as a I don't want to speak for you, but wouldn't you say you kind of believe the opposite there? Like, why can't it just be a historical book? Why does it have to be more of a theological emphasis? Isn't that just how we read the Bible then?
Yeah, you make a good point.
Sorry, I'm just very proud of myself here. The whole time you were talking, that's what I was thinking about. But, well, I believe you think the opposite. Anyways, we don't have to talk about that.
No, because I believe something there doesn't mean it has to go all the way across throughout the whole Bible. Because I would say that Genesis 1 and 2 are doing different things than the Exodus
people
is doing.
Have a lot of problems with that kind of thinking.
Well, of course they do.
Just because I believe this about this book doesn't mean I have to believe it. And that is where people, and granted, it is a slippery slope, because that's when, like, you get to the point, yeah, the conquest never happened. That's not historical either, right? Right? And that's where it leads to, right? Like, it can potentially. That's why I say it's a slippery slope. Like, that is one of the train of thoughts and one of the theories behind the Exodus. It was not a mass exodus, like the Bible says. I'll just get into Cole's notes real quick. It was just the Levites that left, and they just met up with the nation of Israel, and the conquest never happened. Like, that's the working theory that biblical scholars have, that this is what happened. Like, it's not at all how the Bible said.
Right.
It's a small exodus. Israel was already out there. They already had the land. They didn't need to conquest it. The Levites came, presented God, was the mediators, and then there's the nation of Israel. Like, that's a working, and there's some evidence for that. Like, it's not like it's just total,
yeah, right,
randomly selected ideas. We can get into those evidences too if we want. I don't know where you want to go with that. Sure. All that to say is, taking certain parts historically and other parts not, granted, doing it across different books is better, but it's just that there's the slippery slope of, you know, the Old Testament, none of it happened. It's all just a figurative way of saying Christ is coming, right? Like, and you can't get to that point. That's all I mean.
I guess what I was saying is that Genesis 1 and 2 are more poetic or hymnic, and this has a degree, like, this is telling you something that seems more historical. So that's what I mean. And right. All I'm getting at is that it just seems like in modern scholarship regarding the Old Testament, or the Hebrew Bible, if you want to call it that, is that because there's a theological agenda, because it's overtly saying something about Yahweh, then it's not actually historical in the same sense that a book of history would be today. Like, it's more like hagiography, which is when you write something in, you're not really being objective. You're kind of praising the people that you're writing about. So I guess it's good to point out from, you know, that this is being pointed out by these articles. Pete Enns is really pointing that out more than this Friedman fellow, because Friedman is actually upholding the historical, the historicity of it. But just to recognize that this this interplay of history and theology, because in my mind, I don't know how I would reconcile saying, this isn't really historical. In, you know, if I went with the Pete Enns, because he says in his article. So what we have in the biblical story regarding the Exodus is not history in the sense we would recognize today, nor is it made up out of white cloth. Okay, great. It is both. There seems to be some authentic past being recalled, but that past is presented creatively, imaginatively. Although there is evidence that connects the Exodus story to history, the book of Exodus tells a story, an ancient story that answers ancient questions. Like what?
So, I mean, that begs the question. I mean, I think with this topic, then you need to answer the questions of, do you think it was a mass exodus, and how do you reconcile that with it not making any sense?
But Pete Enns is saying that there isn't even a mass, that there is no exodus, really.
Well, I don't think
that's what he seems.
I think he just doesn't. It's not how that happened in the Bible. I think that's what he thinks.
Well, that would make more sense, because I don't know how you reconcile saying this event didn't happen, but it's a huge paradigm for the Bible.
Well, and I think it's just as hard to reconcile, oh yeah, it happened, but not as the Bible says it happened. Isn't that just as hard to reconcile? How do you say it happened, but the Bible's wrong and how it happened?
Oh, that's what I mean.
Even if part of it's true, just not how the Bible said it is, well, even that's hard to comprehend, because then the Bible's lying to us. Like, how does... And that's the tricky part of... Is the Bible lying to us, or are we just not... is it a story, right? Like, is it...
Well, and...
presenting different ideas, different themes, different concepts, right?
I mean, that really shows us that we're trying to wrap our minds around this ancient text. And I think that it's easier for us to grasp the theology of it, because it's a theological event showing God rescuing his people to establish a nation, which therefore is in the grander scheme of things of God sending the savior of the world.
Yeah.
And we are participating in a new Exodus. So that's why I say it's a theological event that God is working, like, just doesn't make sense to me historically, because I'm holding firm to this idea that this is one area where I'd say it just seems like the history matters here for the theological event, because the rest of our faith is kind of based on this premise, like the Passover, right. We think of Christ as the Passover lamb. We think about going into the new Exodus with him. So it just, you know, I'm wondering what is the basis then for all this?
Yeah, but even if it wasn't a mass Exodus, that doesn't negate those things.
Oh, I see. Yes, absolutely. Like what Friedman is proposing.
Yeah, and like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if,
right.
I don't know if Peter Enns doesn't think there isn't an Exodus, or he just doesn't think it's how it happened. That's the catalyst here. If he thinks it didn't happen at all, then I think we have a major problem.
I'm sure he explains it further somewhere, but I don't want to buy his book. So
leave that heresy on the shelf.
But there was something that you wanted to talk about, the evidence from Friedman. I think that would be helpful to hear some of the evidence.
What's that, sorry?
The evidence from Friedman.
Well, he points out some interesting points of, and it's not him only, right? This is scholarly works, right? He goes into the four or five different sources they have for Exodus, like the manuscript sources. So he goes into that and gets kind of into that, and it gets kind of convoluted trying to understand exactly what he's getting at, when, you know, because source J says this and this source is from this, you know, and that can get really convoluted. But the Coles notes of it all is he mentions the names of people in the Bible. He says there's 8 Egyptian names. All of them happen to be Levites. They all happen to be priests.
Yeah,
so that's a little coincidental, like including Moses, right? Like they all have Egyptian names. So that's one thing. He's like, well, that's kind of interesting to think about. All the the Egyptian names listed in the Bible are all priests. So that's one thing to kind of think about. And then he mentions the Song of Miriam when they cross the sea. It doesn't mention the nation of Israel at all. It doesn't say Israel. In the original text, he makes that caveat. He says, in the original text, doesn't mention Israel by name. It doesn't say the nation of Israel. Never mentions this huge nation. Presumably, there wasn't a huge nation. So that's the other. But it does reference the tabernacle, that the place of God. So he makes these points, which, like I said, I have no reason to say that's 100% right. I'm going off of his word, his study, his work that he has done on it. These are the points he brings up. Then interestingly, this is the interesting part, I thought. He also brings up the Song of Deborah in Judges, which is really weird. You think, why would you bring that up? And he brings that up to say the Levites aren't mentioned there. And that's how he ties together these ideas of Israel didn't have the Levites yet. When the Song of Deborah came, Levites were coming out of Exodus then, out of Egypt, and then they met up with them there. And that's how you get the problem, because if that's the case, all of Joshua, the conquest, didn't really happen. And that's the problem with that theory for me, right? I can't mend that to say the whole book of Joshua didn't happen. But there is
evidence. Because the Levites weren't present in the song, like the story leading up to the Song of Deborah. That's why Joshua.
Yeah. So it's very strange. So the correlation is in the Song of Deborah. She's, I believe she's calling nations to battle. I believe that's his point. And Levites aren't mentioned, whether or not it's because they were just Levites and weren't supposed to battle the people of God. But his point is that because they're omitted, therefore they weren't actually there. They came after. If they came after, then that means all of Joshua couldn't have happened because they're mentioned in Joshua.
So maybe the argument is then that story of Deborah happens historically earlier than the events of Joshua.
No, the idea is Joshua just didn't happen.
Oh, that's what he says.
Yeah, the nation was already established. Like, they didn't conquest anything. And that's the problem with that. It's like, it's funny. I was reading this book and I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. I was kind of on board. I kept nodding my head thinking, yeah, he makes a really good point. And then he got to that point where he's like, yeah, so this means the conquest didn't happen. And I was like, okay.
So he's upholding Exodus, the book of Exodus.
To a point.
The book of Joshua is.
He's upholding Exodus, but not how it actually says it happened. It wasn't a mass exodus. It was a few hundred thousand people at most.
Right. It was the tribe of Levi.
Tribe of Levi leaving. Yeah. And he makes a convincing point of why it would just be the tribe of Levi. I just can't get on board with throwing out a whole book of the Bible.
I think that's
kind of complex. And forgive me if I'm misrepresenting him. Maybe he's just making a counterpoint to someone else. But like I was telling Perry before we got on board, after I read that, I just stopped reading. So I was like, yeah, I was a naive person. I was like, no, this guy can't have anything else good to say. So maybe I didn't see him through on that. So maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it at all. But that's kind of where I stopped reading for a bit. So I was like, that makes no sense. But he says a group who came of Israel, who evidence suggests were the Levites. This is an exact quote from his book. Found Israel and Judah already there. They were already there and they just kind of joined. Right. And that's kind of the mindset. So they're there for hundreds of years before Israel came, or before the Levites came and joined them. There's lots of problems with that in the Bible, but that's kind of elite A theory, but interesting if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. So like I said at the beginning, it might be time to get some courage up and see if Pete Enns or even Friedman.
Peter Enns, that guy's a...
Maybe we should get them both on at the same time.
If we can get them on, I think we've made it in podcast. That's all I'm going to say. That's a tall task, but that would be interesting.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they actually believe, because I know like in the book I have and in that article, they kind of leave you on a cliffhanger.
Exactly.
And they do good theologic, good like research in that they present both views, but you never really know where they stand. Like they don't, they kind of just keep their cards down. Like they kind of reveal one card at you and you can, okay, I kind of see what you're doing. But they kind of keep themselves close, so you don't really know exactly what they think. And that's what I found in this book for sure. I didn't know what he thought because he just kept presenting different views. And I was like, well, what do you think? What is your view on it? And he hasn't really presented. He kind of favors one, but then he kind of rebuttals it. And so it's really interesting in that sense. So it'd be really cool to actually get him on. But like I said,
with Friedman, I think he, like you talk about the different sources. I think that's redactional criticism, like where you're trying to figure out how the sources all came together and how the editor put them all together.
Yeah, that's so confusing to me.
Because he like has the J source and the E source and the P source. And so then you kind of say, oh, these sources look the same. So that must be the J source. And so then you say, oh, the J source ends here and picks up here. And the Exodus isn't in the J source. And I think that's just major hoops to get through to kind of make your, really, but it's biblical scholarship. So,
but
we're not doing an academic thing here. This is, we're just kind of, that's the fun thing about this. Oh, it's a break from seminary. I don't have to, it's okay if I make blanket statements.
But that stuff is so confusing. I find that very confusing when I think sources into it and trying to figure out what source is saying which.
I don't think it has as much support today among scholars because it's just, obviously you don't see it in English.
Yeah.
And I don't know Hebrew at all. So I'm just wondering if it's maybe like looking at the intricacies of the Hebrew and it might not be consistent. So there's I can understand, hey, it's likely that this was edited to a degree after the exile, but I don't agree to the extent that Moses outright didn't write any of this really, or he's just one of the sources amongst all of this. It's interesting, and you know, we're leading up to Easter here, we're in the season of Lent, so it kind of is a good way to transition into that here in a few weeks, thinking about, you know, that, like I said earlier, Christ is the Passover lamb and
good connection.
And we're participating in the new Exodus. Like it just so happens that my reading plan is going through Exodus right now, like in the Anglican lectionary, like daily lectionary, it takes us through Genesis and Exodus leading up to Easter.
Right.
And I really do enjoy reading Exodus, and so that's why I, you know, feel like I just have that uncomfortableness, that uneasiness when you say, well, is it really historic? Because then I just don't know how I would read it. So that's why I want to know more. And he probably, like, that's why Pete probably ends his article like the way he does. So you buy his book. Like at the end of it, it says buy his book.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
But it's just so interesting. Just I would love to do, this is an idea I had a few years ago, it would be so fun to do a study through Exodus and just say, where do we find Jesus here? Where is this, you know, how does Jesus pick these things up? That would be kind of a fun thing to do. Might have to be careful about it, but
I think Leviticus would be even better.
That would be interesting. I was starting to listen to a talk the other day where this guy is talking about Exodus a bit. And he was like, you know, he's like in his 50s probably. He says, in my 30 years of being a theologian, how many times have I read Exodus through? And he said, probably 3 or 4 times. And I thought that would be interesting to listen to those. So we'll have to get into that this season. We're hoping to do some more Old Testament topics. So
yeah, that's the plan. But I think we'll end it there for today. Yep. Hey, I think we're out of time. It's getting late. Got to go put the kids to bed and go to bed myself. I don't even work tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, you want to close up this episode, Perry?
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, joining us for this season premiere of season 3. We're back at her. I'm glad that you haven't lost hope. Let's see. Let's see who the real dedicated ones are, and see who the five people are that listen to this.
We just tell ourselves we're giving you a chance to catch up. That's what we tell ourselves. We took a hiatus so you could catch up on episodes.
Yeah. Oh, I should go check how many we have now. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. As usual, we would love to hear what you have to think about this topic. Was the Exodus historical? Hopefully we convinced you of one. Whatever. If we didn't convince you, that's okay. We've opened up some new avenues of thinking. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, Perry Ponderings. Please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast to help get the word out. And until next week,
keep pondering.